We've been in review here for a while, and you're coming in the middle. I'm sorry that you're late to get the... but that's just for you all that are listening on the tape. The rest of us know what's going on, so just, you know, check with us. The important thing to remember at this point is, just for the tape, there was creation and new creation, and that the story is about God. When a story is about God, it's God's story. And the first question that we were asking really has to do 2 weeks ago with, if we're transferred into the kingdom of light and we're living by the rules of the kingdom of light, most people are still under the authority of darkness and they're still walking around. And darkness has its own rules, like the squeaky wheel gets all the attention, like he who has the gold makes the rules, like if you're big, you're going to get your way. Like people that use force are going to get their way. Like the big and the strong and the wealthy and the intelligent and the bright and the fast and the swift are going to win the race. And that winning is important and the race is important and winning the race is even more important. And when you have these kind of rules going on and you have these kind of ethics established, then the meek have a hard time inheriting the earth, don't they? Mm-hmm. And when you turn the other cheek, you finish last, and they hit you twice. And it's meekness and grace, meekness and mercy represent weakness in the sight of a person, because they say, give me the other cheek, I'll hit that one hard. I'll hit it harder. And so if you're strong in the virtues of the kingdom of light, nice guys finish last is the way it appears. From a practical viewpoint. And so we were saying, well, what are you going to do about this? And the turning around is, what do you mean, what are you going to do about it? The story is about God, not what you're going to do to serve God. And until you get that straight, you really don't have an idea of what meekness is, and you really don't have an idea of how you fit into the plan. And you're not approaching it right, because you're approaching it with the idea that you're going to do something that's of worth to God, and this is what you have to contribute. And just starting with the word I, in itself, takes the focus off who? God and his story. So the story is about God, and not what we do for him or what we do to fit into his plan. And what we do for him on Shabbat is we abide in the light. And what we do for him is we spend time with him, we get radiated by his holiness. What we do for him is that by being in his presence, we're transformed. And when we're transformed, we begin to develop different categories of thought. We think differently. And as we think differently, the things that used to be important to us start to fall away. So great, you finish last in things that aren't important. It doesn't bother you anymore. And not only that, it's not going to work out that way anyhow. It's only going to start that way. Abraham, what was he told? Leave everything. It starts out, Abraham zeroed out. He loses everything. And saving faith, walking in saving faith, has everything to do with trusting that God has a story, and that if you can figure out what his story is and be a part of it, it's a different destiny for you. When Avram starts to figure out the different destiny, his name goes from Avram, exalted father, to Avraham. And in this portion, his new name, Avraham, Av Hamon Goyim, father of a mass of nations. This guy didn't even have a kid. He's still waiting for a kid right now as this portion ends. Everybody's circumcised, standing around going, ah. And the last thing they tell us is, Nahor is busy having a 12-tribe confederation and a daughter to Betuel. And Betuel, his daughter's name is who? Who's Betuel's daughter?
I don't know.
Oh, it's at the Maftir of Lech Lecha. So look it up for me. There's a whole list of names. There's 12 men. There are 12 people mentioned. Four of them are sons and daughters, and 8 of them are concubines, just like what's going to happen with the tribes of Jacob.
What's the Maftir?
The last two verses.
The last three or four verses in Genesis.
It's the Maftir
17
is
12.
17.
24, 4 through 27.
So there you have it. And there's a woman stuck in there, this woman's name. So I got a Hebrew speaker here, so I got to read in the Hebrew scriptures.
Right.
Betuel?
There's no Betuel here.
Oh, Betuel.
There's Ishmael, but there's no Betuel.
Oh, you know, you might be right.
My question.
You might be right. How do you like that? Gotta look out here.
It ends up with Ishmael being 13 years old.
And he's circumcised.
Yeah,
okay, I'm another maftir ahead. Yeah. No, I'm another maftir ahead. I'm in the old Vayera here. Because I haven't looked at this. But that's fine.
Oh, you want the end of Vayera? Look at
that. Yeah. But that'll be next week, and but you can look there.
Betuel gave birth to Rivka.
That's right. And so we're going to have Rivka introduced in the next portion. Now, there's going to be a relationship, but we will get to that next week because that's when they have the children. Right now, they're waiting, and Ishmael is 13. He's circumcised. The whole household is circumcised. Everybody's circumcised, and what do they have to show for it? No heir still. No heir. So what kind of saving faith is going on here in Lech Lecha? Abraham is told, leave. He leaves. He's told, stay in the land? No. There's a famine. He goes down to Egypt. But every time he stands in faith, he inherits. He inherits promises. When we get to Genesis 15, he's just come from Genesis 14 where he's fought the international empire. And he still doesn't have seed. When he doesn't have seed, he has nobody to give his inheritance to. Now, I want some help here. In Genesis, we learn it's God's story and to abide in the light. And we learn spudazomeh, to hasten to enter Shabbat rest, from Hebrews 4:11, right? We hasten to enter the rest. And if we hasten to get to Shabbat and to rest, we're beginning to dwell in God's presence. We're beginning to abide in the light. And abiding and dwelling will transform us. So it's supernatural transformation that's going to take place, and it's got more to do with our just being in God's presence than any thought, than any actions, than any deeds, than any reading, than any sermon listening to, or anything else. Simple abiding in the presence of God has to do with becoming conformed unto His image. It has to do with being transformed from image to image into the glory of His Son. Now, when we dealt with the idea of humility last week, we were saying, well, what is meekness? What is humility? And the word praotes meant the quality of not being overly impressed, the quality of not being overly impressed by a sense of one's self importance. Like, what am I going to do for God? Rather than, this is God's story. There's implicit change that takes place once we begin to decrease in our lives and God begins to increase in our lives. And we have to allow that thing that's totally other from us to grow and take on a life of its own, to take over us. This little light that's in us that represents Yeshua radically breaking into history, the light. Men love the darkness. Where are we hanging out? Oh, in the kingdom of darkness. Why? Because we're doing impressive things for God. Because we're doing important things for God. Oh, because we're doing important things in the world. This radical breaking in of the light has its own rules, has its own kingdom, has its own reality. And if we don't abide there, we don't know about it because we're not living in it. If the kingdom of God is reigning in our hearts, in its light that's within our hearts, but we're not dwelling there, then how are we going to learn what it is to exist in that presence? And what we said so far is that maybe over the last 2,000 years and maybe another 1,000 years to come, the Torah part, the Old Covenant part, is phasing out. From Hebrews 8:13, this is passing away. It hasn't passed away. The Torah is still there. It hasn't passed away. We're still looking we're being regathered from the four corners of the earth. It hasn't passed away. Messiah is going to set up a throne and reign for 1,000 years. And when he does, Torah is going to be the instruction of God. And it's going to define sanctity, sanctification. And drawing near to God has to do with changing the kingdom of carnivores into non-carnivores. Not devour, not biting and devouring behavior is going to be the spiritual dynamic that drives the kingdom. And right now, meekness has no chance against that. Because everybody bites and devours. That's so normal, we take it for granted, like it's normal. We kill and eat every day. Give me a hamburger. Let's do this. Let's do that. But when the lion lays down, when the wolf lies down with the lamb, hello? You're talking about ontological changes in animals. Well, how's that going to reflect the glory of man? Well, we have to change first before they change. And we have to get critical mass before any kind of those changes like that take place. There's got to be a kingdom ruling. And right now, there's a fallen kingdom. And so the whole norm, everything is revolving around bite and devour. Cain killed Abel. The blood lays there on the ground. Abel's big eyeball is crying up from heaven saying, ah! And God is looking. And has it been repented? Zechariah comes along, dies in the same. The kingdom gets set up and in Jerusalem, and the purification starts taking place, and holiness starts going out. Sinai moves over to Jerusalem. The kingdom of God flows down. God dwells in the presence of the tabernacle and then dwells over the curtains, dwells over the tent, fills Solomon's tent. They're in there offering sacrifice. There are 70 nations for the 70 nations. The priesthood is going on. Holiness is starting to radiate out from the place God made his name to dwell. It's Jerusalem. It's beginning to go out. And what do? We don't keep the Torah. He sends the prophets. What do? Kill the prophets. He sends more prophets. What do? We kill Zechariah. Right in the holy place. Between the altar and the... Right in the north side of the altar where the lamb, where Yom Kippur goat would be slain. Between the altar and the porch. Priest can't go down and up. He can't wash his hands and walk in and sacrifice at the altar, walk into the Holy Holy with the blood without having Zechariah's blood on his shoes. Zechariah screaming, Zechariah, God, remember what they did! They made me another Cain-Abel deal. Brother killed brother. They left me unburied in the wrong place. And God says, the experiment's over. Stunned silence for 400 years, no prophets, and then Messiah. And he comes and tells the story of the prodigal son. And what happens? Oh, comes and tells the story of the parable of the vineyard. What happens?
They didn't like it.
They didn't like it. And they as we. We didn't like it. He says, go ahead and fill up the cup of the fathers. Matthew 23. Kill me too. Okay, take him out of the city, kill him, boom. What's God going to do now?
Yeshua going out says the temple's finished. Jews will be scattered to the four corners of the earth.
And we'll wait for 50 generations. So 40 years, 50 generations, couple thousand years. So 1948 before the Caesar Empire, Abraham, zero, Yeshua, or thereabouts. 1948, State of Israel, let's start over, try again. We'll begin to regather. Because in the Jubilee generation, you know, the people running wild, you know, got to go free whether you like it or not. That generation sold all of us down the tubes. Because what's God going to do? The very place that he used to cleanse the earth was polluted. Why? Cain, Abel.
So we kill Cain. Cain kills Abel. New experiment. New creation. Tabernacle. Temple. Glory. Real experiment on earth. God still physically manifest in the presence.
And then we drive him out of the camp. We kill Zechariah. 10 times 40 generation. 10 generations after that. Here comes Yeshua, we kill him, and we finish the sins of the fathers. On the Cain-Abel experiment, unwind the whole thing, that means scattering. When Cain did it, there was a curse on the ground, scattered. And now Israel, forget the whole thing, scattered again. So we're scattered for 2,000 years, and the temple can't do any cleansing for a while. Got to be cleansed itself because it's become a sarcophagus. And what do you do when the temple becomes a sarcophagus? You tear out every stone, open it up to the air, so you can begin to cleanse it. And then you got to cleanse the ground. And that'll be before the third temple. Got to cleanse the ground. But the walls had to be pulled down stone by stone, because the house has turned into a tomb for the prophet. And God remembers. And when Yeshua comes, he says, from Abel to Zechariah, you killed everybody, you kill me next. And we do. So he didn't forget. But there's the experiment. Now, look at the 10-generation idea. Adam, 10 generations later. Noah, new beginning. 10 generations later, Abraham. When Abraham comes, Avraham becomes Avraham. Avraham, father of a mass of nations. Before he has a kid, he's got the promise. Kings are going to come from him. Genesis 17. Well, that's going to culminate in the King of Kings. We'll see that at the end of Genesis, but he's told a line of kings right now. And you can be sure, father to son, because there's unbroken continuity from Adam to Noah, patriarch. From Noah to Abraham, patriarch. Now Judah is going to become kingmaker. From Judah to the end of the line. Yeshua, salvation. That's going to be part of what Abraham's going to believe. So Abraham is going to believe God that he left everything. His kindred, his family, his father's house, his nation. And God's going to give him back 100 times. What is it? Kindred, family, father's house, nation. Nation to reach the nations of the world. Millennial kingdom with the Messiah. It's all out there. And he knows through Yitzhak that's where it's going to come. He knows this. Abraham knows this. So what is saving faith? He's not impressed with all that. What is he impressed with? It starts in Genesis 15, 6. So I want somebody to read Genesis 15, 1 through 6 in the English. And then we're going to skip the Romans and start pulling together. Some with a strong voice, Genesis 15, 1 to 6.
After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, "Do not be afraid, Abram."
Al tira, don't be afraid.
"I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward." But Abram said, "Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless, and the heir of my house is Eleazar of Damascus?"
Now, the word really isn't childless. It's arri. What is that better translated?
Alone.
Alone? How about arurata? What's that mean?
Cursed.
Ah.
But it's spelled differently.
Ariri is with a yod.
No, ariri was an ayin. Arur was an aleph.
Oh, seems like we're childless. Okay. Go ahead.
Then Avram said,
"Alone.
Look, you have given me no offspring. Indeed, one born in my house is my heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, this one shall not be your heir, but one who will come from your own body shall be your heir. Then he brought him outside and said, look now toward heaven and count the stars. If you are able to number them, he said to him, so shall your descendants be."
Okay, stop. Go back to verse 2 again.
But Abram said, "Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless?"
Seeing I'm alone, right.
"And the heir of my house is Eliezer."
Now, it's not really the heir of my house. What is it?
Sort of like that. It's a son of the...
Son of the house.
Son of the house.
It's the adopted son.
Now, understand. The son of the house. This is a house. Abraham's got a house. And the son of the house. What son does he have? See, Ariri, he's alone. So the son of the house is who?
Eliezer of Damascus.
When Eliezer, what does that word, what does that name mean?
God will help me.
God is my help, yeah. Eliezer of Damascus, Dameshek. You went to Damascus, it's the capital of what?
Syria.
Now, he's got some Syrian guy out there, it's a Canaanite running around. He's got a Canaanite heir. His senior steward. At the Akedah, we're going to learn, they got two people with him. The tradition is going to say that the two people attending are the guy that just gets circumcised in this portion here, 13-year-old. What's his name?
Ishmael.
Ishmael. And Eliezer. Those are going to be the two guys that are with him, the two that he takes on the donkey in the tradition. And we'll talk about why, because it's very interesting to think about that. Now, if that's 15:2, here this guy wants a son, and he got a son of a house, and the son of the house is the son of God's house. But do you see the connection already where you're opening a line for Yeshua because the son of God's house is going to be the son of God. And Abraham, meanwhile, is living in the son of Abram's house, except he's about to learn that he's left his father's house and he's going to a land God will show him. He's going to find his way to God's house. He's going to start naming property Bethel, house of the Lord. He's going to be figuring this out. He's going to be figuring out that it's not his story, it's God's story. And he's going to be walking a path. And the path is going to be a path of saving faith. And we're going to figure out what that is, because saving faith has to be a dynamic for us and how we live. If it's a dynamic for us, we'll be able to move through life's problems with completely different eyes. Verse 3.
Then Abram said, "Look, you have given me no offspring. Indeed, one born in my house is my heir."
So he confronts God, saying, "Yeah, I'm giving you I don't care what you give me. I don't have an heir. I don't have seed. I don't have any hope for long life. I can't pass the torch across generations. Nothing. I'm not on this planet to accumulate things. I'm not a Cainite. I'm not into power and preeminence and what I can do to be strong and great and put my name up on walls to live forever. I want a son. I want to be a father. My name's Avram. Avram. Right now it's Avram. I'm some kind of exalted father. Ben Meshach, you know, son of Eliezer, well, Ben Meshach.
He says, "The Lord took me out here, and he took me all the way out here for something. I don't know what he took me out here for."
Yeah, to a land that I'll show you.
Halfway decent, right?
So then go ahead.
"And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, 'This one shall not be your heir.'"
Nah, he just disinherited Eliezer by word of faith. Keep going.
"But one who will come from your own body."
Now catch that. One that'll come where?
Well,
he's 99. That's a tall order, right?
Well, he's got a young princess that he can consort with. And
you know, if you're sitting there and you're 99.
Yeah, and your wife is 89.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're going, "You know, I've been too active lately." I mean, that could be threatening.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, it's going to be exciting, right? No, is it more exciting or more threatening? You got to be 89 to answer that question.
Yeah, depending on your perspective.
99, yeah. Okay, now keep going here.
"Then he brought him outside and said, 'Look now toward the heaven and count the stars. If you're able to number them,' he said to him, 'so shall your descendants be.'"
Okay, now in the tradition, he's actually 70 at this time. But now look what happens here, because this is the covenant between the parts. And he's going to go back up and be with his father and leave when he's 75. But here he's 70, actually. The tradition has him in the promised land at this particular time. He's down there for a while, and he's going back up.
70 or 75?
70.
So this is before he went to the promised land?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tradition.
Okay.
Okay? And then you're going to be Ishmael at 86, 11 years later. But 16 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Now, which is kind of, okay.
87.
So he takes him outside and he says, "Look at what?
Stars.
Look at the Milky Way. You want seed? Take a look at the Milky Way." You get that? You been out in the country?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Gorgeous.
When the aurora borealis is gone? Mm-hmm. Okay, and we've still got enough pollution around here. You don't really see it the way he did. We got lights around here that reflect around. It was cold, dark. At night, it shines. He looked up there, and you know what he saw? Cream of mushroom soup up there.
Basically.
No.
Lit up, chicken big stars. Time. Chicken stars for you. Okay, now keep going.
And he believed in the Lord, and he accounted it to him for righteousness.
Counted it for him as righteousness. What is that? V'yachshavecha?
V'yachshaveh.
Yeah, v'yachshaveh. V'yachshaveh. Now, that comes from choshev, you know, the idea is, you know, it's reckoned.
Think.
Rethink and consider. And Paul's going to put a spin on this in Romans. He's going to call it, he's going to use a word that in the Greek means put it on his account ledger. He's going to count it. It's an accounting ledger. That's the spin that's going to put in the Septuagint. and it's going to be borrowed and put into Romans, where he's going to count it to him for righteousness. And when he does this, what kind of righteousness are we dealing with? Tzedakah?
He doesn't walk away. He doesn't give up. He doesn't walk away from the situations. He keeps coming. He listens. And he says,
well, this is God, the Yahshuvah.
I'll trust you, you know, because I don't know anything. All I know about you is what I know so far, and you've come through so far.
Right.
You know?
But you know, the only other time in Torah we're going to be using Yahshuvah. So I'm not looking at the accent. Yahshuvah. The only time the only other time that's used will be when Judah is looking at Tamar, and Tamar's standing out there, pregnant, and he's going to count it to her as harlot. He's going to reckon her for a harlot. And the rabbis are going to come behind that, and they're going to say, would that it be a reckon to me, you know, with a misperception like that. Because what happens? Tamar prevails. She gets twins. And when we look at what happens with those twins, you begin to see how history gets rewritten. So the idea, these are only two times that you have this Yahshuvah being used in the Torah. One is God making the accounting, the reckoning, and the other is Judah making the accounting and the reckoning. And remember, in both instances, we're setting up a kingly line. Now, read the next verse.
7.
Oh, wait a minute. So he counted it for him as tzedakah. What is tzedakah?
Tzedakah.
Yeah, tzedakah in Ashkenazi. What's tzedakah?
It's a little box that you put your change in when they next to a cash register at
charity.
A store when they give
charity.
When they give you change and you don't want to put the quarters in your pocket.
Yeah, go put it in the box. Tzedakah, right? Mm. Oh, you don't touch that on Shabbat, huh? Money. Ah, dirty money. I thought it's righteousness and you're calling it dirty money. Look at this.
That's the hot seat, not this, all right?
Excuse me?
Even you open your mouth, see, so you're in trouble.
Don't you sell me short.
She's doing good. So, alright, so to the cow, what is that?
Charity.
But the righteousness, too. Mm-hmm. And the righteousness is there's merit involved. Merit. No, get this idea. God accounted it. God reckoned it to Abraham because he believed what?
He believed God's promise to him.
And what was God's promise?
That his descendants would number as the stars.
Yeah, he looked at the Milky Way and believed him. And he said, I believe him for the Milky Way, like I said, that could be threatening. But he believed him on the spot, boom. And the guy, he just confronted God saying, well, I don't have an inheritance, and I got to leave everything to some Canaanite. You don't want me to come down here to leave everything Canaanite. I left everything back there at Shem country. I come down here, I got everything here, I got to go over to Canaanite. How long I got to wait? Oh, I don't know, 25, 50 years, 75 years, how about 100 years, you know. No problem. And then the Akedah, give them back. Switcheroo. You'd think God was a God of a Semite or something, you know? Yeah, I give you a sign, okay, I take him back. Offer him as an Olah. That's next week. Because this week, we're not going to get to offer him as an Olah. This week, we're going to sit around circumcised waiting for him still. And it's a long week when you're waiting circumcised. Do you understand? Time stops!
It's a memorable experience.
But God reckoned to him as tzedakah, righteous merit.
Merit, right.
Jeff, was it at that point that he changed his name from Avram to Abraham?
Ah, did that happen yet?
No.
Not yet.
Not until the covenant.
He's not circumcised yet, and nothing happened yet. He's going to be told Land of Kings in Genesis 17. That's on the other side of Ishmael. And he hasn't had Ishmael yet. All he's done is got circumcised right now.
But I think he has left Haran, hasn't he?
Yeah, he left. Yeah. Well, he did.
Yeah.
Well,
because the portion starts and within a few verses it says he left for Canaan.
I know. The
If you're buying the
right
sequence.
That's why I told you what the tradition says. The tradition will say, Ein Mukdam. There's no early. And what? Ein Meyuchar. There's no late and there's no early in the Torah, is what the traditional say. Mm-hmm. So when they're lining this up, and they've got their reasons, what they're trying to do is reconcile 430 years. And at 70 then, you got to get to 30 years for him to be 100. You've got to get Isaac in the picture. And you got to count this 400 years
so
down in Egypt.
We might not necessarily go with tradition on this.
This is where you get 400 and 430 and you're balancing this out.
But in terms of if you're just reading straight through Genesis.
Right, you think he left.
He's already been out there and split up with Lot, right?
Yeah, but let me undermine a little more just to make it tougher on you. Look at the Genesis 11:32. Read that verse for me.
So the days of Terah were 205 years and Terah died in Haran.
No, Terah died, right?
Yeah.
Okay, go back to Genesis 11:26. Read that one for me.
It is anachronistic. She's not dead yet.
Okay. Don't say
and Terah lived 70 years.
Let people figure out. You're going to get killed.
And begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran.
Terah was how old?
70.
So he's about 70, and Avram's first name up, right? Mm-hmm. So he's 70 when he's having Avram. And he's 205 when he dies, right? Now read Genesis 12:4.
Avram is 75.
Well, if Avram's 75, then how old's Terach? But I thought he died already.
Okay.
Now, if that didn't happen, how do you know what else is not? So, in Mukdam, in Meuchar. There's no early and there's no late.
It's not chronological. It's
no.
You just have to keep in mind that you got a story going on.
Sure.
And when you're trying to put... when you're
right. I forgot.
And so when you're trying...
Let me put this in so at least I'm telling the truth.
Yeah, sure, you had to remember it backward, and then instead of just changing
right.
it, he leaves it, right? Yeah.
Well,
and remember, it's the same guy 8 verses later. That's pretty good, you know?
You had to put it in.
Now, I have to tell you, you did change portions from Noach to Lech Lecha, so maybe, you know, that was on this scroll, and this was on this scroll before they stitched them together. But, you know, after the first guy that's going to stitch them together going to see that. I mean, I saw it. So, you know.
Well,
and they got 4,000 years to change this. They haven't done that, so. So anyway.
Oh, it's in there. That's it.
Yeah, it's in there. But remember, at the beginning when it was in there, you know,
yeah.
How to get in there at the beginning. A guy like me, if I'm worried about chronology, I take it out. Because I'm writing it, I wouldn't put it in. And Moses is not dumb. He wouldn't put it in. Okay? They don't worry about that. So what are they worrying about? Okay. Now, we went on a tangent here on the Ein Mukdam. So, the next verse.
7?
Yeah.
Then he said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to inherit it.
Okay, now stop. This is very important. I brought you out of exile. Because I didn't know I was in exile. Yeah, I brought you out. You want to see that again? Go to Haftorah, Isaiah 41:10. Now, Haftorah begins on Isaiah 40, verse 27. And it's kind of fun to read 27 to 31, so let's just do that quickly. But then I'm going to jump to 41:10 and 41:14, where it says, Al tirah, don't fear.
40:27. 41:10 is
right.
It's zooming in
on. So start with 40:27. Somebody with a strong voice, read 27, just that verse.
Why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, my way is hid from the Lord, and my right is passed over from my God.
My way is hid. We're back in Babylon again, and we're getting beat up. Now remember, there's two ways that we get beat up heavily. You're in the land, we don't keep the Torah, we don't get on God's kind side, so then we're on the judgment side. Then he's enforcing the covenant. When he's enforcing the covenant, we're not on the kind side, measure for measure. And what's he start doing? He takes away our wealth, our sphere of change. All kinds of things start winding down for us. It gets a little tougher to get our attention. We're not getting fed carrots anymore, we're getting fed sticks, because we're bite and devour guys that aren't keeping the covenant. He's trying to get our attention. So he stops the rain, and we got famine. And if that happens to us, Abraham had famine, Genesis 13, he's out of there. If that doesn't do it, then the next thing is exile. To really get our attention. And you know, he wipes out Israel, he's going to wipe out Judah and send him away for 70 years and say, I'm squaring the Jubilee. It's been 420 years and you owe me 70 because you haven't kept any of the Jubilees, 490 years. Balance comes due on year 420. Go out. Jeremiah says, 70 years. We're out for 70 years. And no one knows 70 years from anything. I mean, if you're a 20-year-old kid and they tell you, Babylon 70 years, then you're coming back. What do you think?
My life's over.
You think I'm going to be Abraham? I'm going to start having children when I'm 90? Forget it. The minute you think that way, your life's finished, right? You die in exile, right? And your kid's kid, what does he think? I'm a good Babylonian. I'm going to stay here. And 95% do. And they stay out there. 5% are going to come back. But before any come back, they get a life in Babylon. They're prospering because be fruitful. You got these cycles. See, it goes like this, up and down, up and down. But if you're on the kind side, up and down, up and down, up and down. It's going up. If you're on the not so kind side, down. Babylon, you're on a rally. So you're in Babylon, you're on a rally. I'm not going back to the promised land, a swamp, ostriches running around there like God said. Forget it. I don't need that. You know, I got commerce here. I got downtown Babylon. We got the empire here. I wouldn't give up New York City or Chicago for, you know, Netanya. Can any good thing come out of Netanya?
Yeah, they've got hang gliding there.
Hang gliding. I like that hang gliding.
And they do a little surfing, too.
Yeah, and then you're up there and the wind stops blowing. Today we said Mashiv HaRuach. This is the seventh of Cheshvan. What does that mean, Mashiv HaRuach? Causes the wind to blow? What's that really mean, Mashiv?
Returning.
Return. And Ruach can be spirit, huh? Cause the spirit to return.
The returner of the spirit.
The return of the spirit. It's important. We're praying for spirit-controlled weather. And the spirit's kind to us. Sanctify the land with life. Geburah, God's creative new might, and that's saving faith. And we're looking right now at saving faith before we get to Romans. So we get to Romans and we start reading, I've got to tell you, there's going to be a Christian lens put on. What's a Christian lens? Paul's doing it. He's talking to the Gentiles. Why is he talking to the Gentiles? He's saying, you guys, you know Jesus rose from the dead, and you got saving faith. And I'm saying, when he's quoting Genesis 15, 6, Abraham had the saving faith, and it's before he was even circumcised. And it was before the Akedah, before he knew that Isaac was going to get back from the dead, before Isaac was the Olah. That's in Vayera, that's next week. How many of you guys showed up in this congregation last year at Vayera? You know, we had people walk in, new people, 2 years, new 2 years ago. Yeah. Vayera, they pop up, right? That's creative new beginnings, okay? And it's life from the dead for a congregation that's got 8 people, right? Yeah. After that, you know, you need youth, and then you need family with a million of kids. You need something. Now, here's Genesis going along. Abraham saving faith. One more for a minion. Yeah, well, they're working on something. I don't know. No. It's not a rumor. So anyway. Here becomes a question. Genesis 15, no, we don't want a minion, that's not God called. So 15:7, Abraham coming back from exile, from Ur, and Isaiah 40, we read 27, it's like you're out there, and you're in exile after you're told 70 years, and you go, my way is hid from the Lord. He doesn't know what's going on. How many people feel that way? Sometimes you're walking around and it's like, this stuff's happening to you. It's all mundane. Nobody understands. You get hammered. You can't believe it. Nobody knows. You share it with 2 or 3 people. I'll pray for you. You know, they pray once. It means more to you than that. They pray twice. Good friend, you know. Somebody you could share it with twice. You know what I mean? You feel like you're squeezing blood out of a turnip. You walk over. You don't know what's going on. And this is Israel in exile there. 70 years, they're told, and they go, my way's hid from the Lord. And it's vitiated. That means lifeless. Or does that mean life full? What is it? Vitiated spirit. The life draining out. You got to have something go on. So verses 28 to 31. This has to do with eagles and waiting and renewing. Here it comes. This is Isaiah, we're in the Haftarah. Now remember, the Haftarah is Israel's experience. It's going to be Israel's collective experience, and it's being paired with Abraham. So Abraham goes along, later on he's going to have a nation going along following in his exact footsteps. and Romans, he's going to have Jews and Gentiles following in his exact footsteps. And this is how we're going to weave together saving faith and how we're going to put all of this together. So we're getting this straight right now, one piece at a time. The Torah, Abraham came out of Ur Kasdim. We just read that. It gave us a tangent. Isaiah, we're dealing with the Haftorah, which is the lived experience of the community. It takes it hundreds and hundreds of years. But we wind up in exile. And we're really defeated. And we feel like God doesn't care and our ways are hid from him, like he can't read our mind and he doesn't care or know about our circumstances because there are lot worse, and it's all quiet, and we're screaming, and nothing's happening, and nobody knows. Verses 28 to 31.
Do you not know, have you not heard, the Lord, the everlasting God, creator of the wide world, grows neither weary nor faint. No man can fathom his understanding. He gives vigor to the weary, new strength to the exhausted. Young men may grow weary and faint. Even in their prime, they may stumble and fall. But those who look to the Lord will win new strength. They will grow wings like eagles. They will run and not be weary. They will march on and never grow faint.
When the eagle got a new plume, so it went in the Middle East, he was renewed. New feathers and he's a new eagle. He's a new man. New clothing, renewed. Big picture here, saving faith. Saving faith what? Trust God to return from exile to the homeland. Abraham did it. He went with his dad, got hung up in Haran. He went down to the promised land, and he was there. And we got on a tangent because Abraham is waiting around in the promised land. Now, mid-6th century BCE, mid-6th century, his tribe's back out in Babylon. And they're saying, renew the redemptive journey. Trust God's providential guidance and his power to bring you out of exile when he says he will. I don't believe it. Yeah, I don't believe what's happening around here. You know, the heathen are running the government. The kingdom of darkness is everywhere. We believers are, you know, grasshoppers, grass blades in the wilderness. A renewal means with three more people joined, there's 6 billion out there that want to kill us or forget about us. It's tough out here. Renew the redemptive journey of Abraham is what Isaiah is talking about. And here he's talking about divine support to the weary. Isaiah 40, 27 to 31. And then the fear of the nations, idolatrous. And then God's guarantee of divine aid. Read 41, verse 10.
Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed.
Mm-hmm. And didn't he just tell that to Abraham in Genesis? Mm-hmm. Al tirah, fear not. I'm your shield. And right after I'm your shield, when do we do that? Amidatu, Gevurah, God's power, Mashiva Ruach, Morida Geshem. And what are we talking about? You woke me up today. I was in the divine slumber. I was dead. My eyes opened. It was a new day, and I'm a new man. Number one, open the eyes of the slumbering. Number two, grass comes up from the earth. The rain falls, and the grass grows. And the Shoshanot, the flowers, jump out from the mountains, and the place greens and becomes beautiful. It's life, where it was parched. And number three going on, he gives life to the dead. M'chaye ametim. So we're talking about resurrection from the dead themes in Gevurah when we're praying. Now it's on this day, it's the 7th of Cheshvan. The pilgrims have had 2 weeks to go home from Shmini Atzeret. They were saying, don't rain, we don't want rain. We're going to start praying rain, Shmini Atzeret. No, don't do it for 2 weeks, I got to get across the Euphrates. So you got the pilgrims going across the Euphrates, getting out of town. And they're going, we don't want any rain in the promised land until we're out of here. Those muddy roads, you try it. I mean, we made the trip to Jerusalem. Give us 2 weeks to get home. The land needs it now. We're going to try to put the wheat in there. I want 2 weeks. We need the rain here. Hey, get me home. Whoosh. 2 weeks. 7th of Cheshvan, the whole community starts. Mashiva Ruach Morida Geshem. Brokata Adonai. Ohinu Melech Ha'olam. What? M'chaye Ha'mitim. Who gives life to the dead, including this land, including waking up in the morning, including resurrection to the dead, the general day of judgment. When the fat lady sings, when you really find out if you're written in the book of life, not you think, when it really happens, and then you really find out.
Now we all know there's guys casting out demons right now that know. Some of them are going to be told, well, you weren't doing that on my authority. That was your story. You get it? I was doing that great thing for you. It's your story. Get it? This is scary. You showed power through my life. Yeah, I sure did. I showed power through Ananias and Sapphira's life. I showed power through the priest that said it's expedient for one man to die. I showed power through Judas' life. I showed power through Hitler's life. He did a lot. But I never knew him. You never knew him, and you let all that stuff happen, including what we did for you. It's hot out there. So, 41:10, how about 41:14?
Fear not, you worm, Jacob, you men of Israel. I will help you, says the Lord, and your Redeemer.
Twice he tells them, fear not. Now, you know this idea about being a worm? What, tolaat? What's a tolaat?
A worm.
A worm. Yeah, tolaat shani.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good worm, huh? See, there's worms and worms. That's priestly linens.
Silk.
So you got these things going on. Okay, well, tolaat. It's a worm. Where's the power of the worm? Well, you know, when we deal with the kingdom of heaven, we're going to find, you know, a lot of things are upside down, right? Might isn't might. And, you know, your story isn't your story. Well, the worm, and not necessarily worm either. This is not condescending so much. Where's the power of the worm?
In the grave.
Oh, that's a good one. You ever see a corpse go by and think you were the next to die? They wrap you in some bloody sheets and then they bury you 6 feet deep. The worms crawl out, the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. The ants play pinochle on your snout. And one little worm that's not so shy crawls in your ear and out your eye. No. Now, you like it. The ants play pinochle on your snout. And one little worm that's not so... Okay. So, now. Hear the tape. Oh, no, you didn't hear it. Now. Yeah, the hook. Where the power of the worm is in... The power of the worm is in his mouth. Okay? The power of the worm is in his mouth. What happens when a worm's crawling through the soil?
He buries them.
And what happens when he does this job?
Loosens it.
Loosens it up, aerates it. Even gets it totally ready for grass and crops to sprout. The power of the worm is in its mouth. And what they're saying to Israel is, okay, you guys, you're humbled here. You know what meekness and humility are now. And the power in your mouth is prayer and intercession. So use it. Worm! Fear not! I'm going to die in Babylon. Fear not! My children are going to die in Babylon. Fear not! All right, my grandchildren will go back from Babylon. Amen.
Is that meekness?
When you're going, God's going to take us back, it is. When you say, I'm going to live through my kids that are going back, and that means I'm going to live because I'm as strong as my grandchildren, you're inflated with your sense of self-importance again. And now the story is about your grandchildren rather than about God, who keeps a promise to Abraham, who is traveling through your seed.
But if I'm a worm...
You can do it. Because the worm stands up and goes like that, and everybody goes, hey, look at a worm, look at him. He's going like this. So, you get a picture of where the Haftarah is sitting on top of the Torah now, okay? The idea of saving faith believes God for an heir. Ex nihilo, Sarah's dead body, that's Abraham. He doesn't know about Sarah's dead body. It's going to come out of his womb. But he thinks, you know, God's good for it. It's going to come out of his womb, and he's 99. He also knows that the vitiated spirit can be revived through trust in God's creative might. Because he's cheered. He went in there saying, Eliezer's my heir. He goes out saying, praise the Lord. He's good for this. He can do it. I saw the Milky Way, and I'm going to have kids that are like that. It's going to be like, I'm going to be like father of the planet.
even though I don't have a kid yet. I believe. It's the opposite of I believe you're trying to drown me, right? You don't know that joke, but you know. Okay. No. We won't tell it.
He has two princesses.
Now we're going to get to Paul. We're going to try to see how saving faith fits into this. First, we got saving faith, believes God for an heir, and it's counted unto Abraham as tzedakah, righteousness. And it's righteous merit. And that's going to be, you know, the merit of the patriarchs, and it's going to be the avot, who will send a redeemer to his children's children with his namesake with love, the first prayer. And then Geburah, he brings life from the dead, including, he's going to bring Abraham back up to be father on the planet in the millennium. And Abraham's going to strut around, and God's going to say, did I do you good? And he's going to go, I never met 6 billion people before. Or a billion, as many as there are. I spent time calculating what would it take him to find a billion people. At 1,000 years, 300 people a day. So old Abraham, you know, he's going to go to a room of 100 people in the morning, 100 people in the afternoon, 100 people in the evening, going to walk around the entire planet, going to do it for 1,000 years, and he'll meet everybody, including whoever in this room gets there. If there's a billion. Remember, it looks like the Milky Way. And God's going to go, did I do you good? Did you enough seed now? He goes, I have no idea. I can't believe this. I mean, when I died, Jacob and Esau were teenagers and they weren't getting along that well. And that's the last thing I saw. I never even saw the 12 tribes of Israel. Oh, amazing. Amazing what's happened in the last 3,000 years since I closed my eyes. What a wake-up call. So, we get to Romans now. Saving faith quickens the crucified Messiah from the dead. I want to read selectively. Romans 4, verse 17. And actually, the theme in the book here will be Romans 4, 24 and 25. So we'll read that first just to show you where it's going. Somebody with a strong voice, read Romans 4, 24 and 25.
Okay.
Go.
But also for us it shall be imputed to us who believe in him, who raised up Jesus our Lord from the dead, who was delivered up because of our offenses and was raised because of our justification.
And he was raised what?
Because of our justification.
Because of our justification. What does that mean? Raised up for our justification. Raised up. Did you say because of or what?
And was raised because of our justification.
Was raised because of our justification. It's tough to make sense out of that, isn't it? Mm-hmm. See, it sounds like gobbledygook.
This one says, and raised to life to justify us.
I raised to life to justify us. Now, it's a paraphrase, but it's more accurate in terms of understanding it.
It also gives in a footnote, or raised to life because we were now justified.
Ah, raised to life because we were now justified. Now, the point is, what are we going to have in the way of saving faith to be justified? What's the ground of justification? See, what does justification rest on?
It doesn't...
Faith.
Does it rest on faith?
Clears its
work. I believe that God.
Grace.
I believe that God, you know, wishes to do well on this planet. It's just that man, you know, won't let it. And what is that? Yes, yeah, see? There's people believe all kinds of things.
That's wrong.
Well, that's great. It's wrong. Somebody read Gen 4, verse 17.
Genesis what?
Romans 4, 17. You read it, the whole verse, and strong.
This accords with the Tanakh, where it says, I have appointed to you to be a father to many nations. Abraham is a father in God's sight because he trusted God and the one who gives him life to the dead and calls non-existent things into existence.
So what is that? Somebody summarize what you just heard.
Sounds like a compilation of John, first Gospel of John, the first sentence in Genesis.
Yeah, it might sound like that.
It sounds like he's trying to combine a bunch of ideas.
Yeah, but you're going to have to really, we're going to digest this verse. So let's hear another translation. That's a good translation, but I just want to hear different translations.
As it is written, I have made you a father of many nations. He is our father in the sight of God, in whom he believed, the God who gives life to the dead and calls things that are not as though they were.
Mm. Now, the idea of calling, all right?
You mean like Ezekiel's bones, huh?
Yeah,
really a dry bones calling him for it.
Well, there's a sequence, is right. But kalesis is the word for calling. It's calling. And this one, this other word, gives life to the dead, mm-hmm. quickens life. Mm-hmm. Zoo piuntes. Zoo is life. And piuntes is like poeo, that's to do, to make. I do, I make. So this is life making. And it's translated often, quickens life. Now, they give us the quickens life first, but then they come back to this idea that it you're making, like this John idea, things that are not being, calls things not being as being. He calls things not being as being. In other words, creates ex nihilo.
Yeah.
It's God's creative activity to create something out of nowhere. Now understand, you can work on the content or the context. And when you transform the content, or you change the context, you're playing with meaning. And meaning is where the moral universe moves. You know, if it's a cold day and you kick somebody out and they die, that's one thing. And if it's a hot day and you kick somebody out and they're cooled off, that's another thing. If a person's got a coat on and they're hot indoors and you tell them to go outside and it's cold, they'll be happy about it. If they don't have a coat on and you tell them to go outside, they'll be unhappy about it. And if they die, guess what? The meaning is changed by just the idea that they had a coat and that outside was cold. If you change something in the context, the same action, kicking the guy outside, one is for the guy's benefit and the other guy is for his detriment. And the things turn on its head based on the context and the content, the same meaning. So same action in one world, in a different world, the action can be totally the opposite. And the meaning can be the opposite.
Whose axe is being gored?
You can look at it that way. So we're dealing with God right now, calling things into not being, calling things not being into being. Now, when he was creating life out of Sarah's womb and out of Abraham's womb, what is this?
Life from the dead.
Is it life from the dead?
Absolutely.
Or is it something new? What is it?
No, it's
life from nothingness.
Life from nothingness.
Well,
see, life from the dead.
But he's 100 years old. He's the walking dead.
But the story's not about him.
That's right.
Okay. So the story is about his son. See, life from the dead, you know what that would be? A dead guy coming back to life, right? Mm-hmm. A person that already lived. Mm-hmm. But calling something not being into being is like giving this guy that lived his whole life with no kids a kid. Because you're creating, even though it's out of a dead body, that's not being. Mm-hmm. He's got not being in there. Sarah had not being. She can't have a kid. No moisture. Edna, no moisture. No moisture, no seed, no planting, nothing. It's like trying to grow something outside with no water. So, when you're going to call something into being from not being, that's part of Romans 4:17, but the other thing is life from the dead. That's going to be part of it too. And Abraham...
Oh, the Akedah.
Yeah. Abraham's got both of those things, but read 4:17 again now.
This accords with the Tanakh, where it says, I have appointed you to be father to many nations. Avram is our father in God's sight because he trusted God as the one who gives life to the dead and calls non-existent things into existence.
Okay, so Abraham is the father of many nations. Now we know when he believed that in Genesis 15:6.
Mm-hmm.
But when he believed that, it's before he was circumcised. Mm-hmm. And it's before he had a kid. Mm-hmm. Now, go to